Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
1-1 pitch. Fastball pulled and passed. Alvarez in toward the corner.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball at cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Adam, Scott, Heath, and Chris.
Another day, another pitcher injury, but also hitter injuries. Hitters get hurt too. Welcome to the show, Fantasy Baseball Today, here on Tuesday, March 10th. Adam Azer and Scott White, and bringing back to the show, Chris Towers. We missed you Sunday, Chris.
Yeah, I couldn't. I was doing a little day drinking on Sunday. Had some plans, couldn't break them. Bought some records. It was a lovely day. Had some sausage.
Scott and I don't day drink, so just so all of you listeners know, we'll always be there for you, no matter what.
Well, noon or night. It was kind of a last minute like switch to Sunday. I had already made plans with some of my pals.
How do you have so many friends? You've been in New York for like 3 months. I've been here for 5 years. I don't have... forget it. All right, so Justin Verlander has a mild lat strain. He is unlikely for opening day. And Scott, where did you move Verlander in your rankings?
So we don't have a timetable yet. He said he felt... His only other IL stint in his career was 2015. And he said this... His feeling was similar to that, although that was a triceps thing. That's what this was originally called too.
I did look that up. I want to provide some details on this because that was a lat strain, actually. There was a story, I think, 2 years ago. The first time he went back to Detroit after getting traded to the Astros, he talked about the fact that... So he was out until... That was like March 27th. He suffered the injury.
Yeah.
He was out until June 15th. So you might look at it and say...
Long absence.
Well, that's 11 weeks. That's right. A really bad thing. But it was originally diagnosed as a tricep strain. He tried to pitch through it. Just couldn't get right. Eventually, they finally figured out that it was a lat strain.
Yeah.
And they had to kind of reset the whole rehab process.
So he says this one doesn't feel as bad as that. They don't give a timetable, but I'm just thinking in terms of having to start over the ramp up process again. I'm not counting on earlier than like mid-May, maybe early May.
Whoa, mid-May. That's a while.
Well, look, we're in mid-March right now. And
are we there? When do you get to mid-March? Yeah, I guess the 10th.
And he's going to sit out at least 2 weeks, I would guess. I don't know. It's a lot of guessing, but I don't want to guess too optimistically and then have a bad pick. So I've moved him down based on the idea he could miss a quarter of the season to just a little outside my top 20. I dropped him behind Chris Paddock, Yu Darvish, and Sonny Gray. I have him ahead of Trevor Bauer and Brandon Woodruff in my starting pitcher rankings. That's an $18 player in Roto still.
Enormous.
But, enormous. See, the thing there is, like, let's say he does miss a month and a half. That's probably, what, six starts? Seven starts?
A quarter of the season would
Justin Verlander...
Like between seven and eight
more
starts.
Like eight, yeah.
I mean, if Justin Verlander makes 27, 26 starts and pitches anywhere close to the level he has the last two seasons, 20 is going to be a steal.
Well, I'd rather be a steal than have a guy I drafted to be an ace be like holding my team back for a long time.
So I'll do the math now. Let's just get 75% of what he did last year, which was probably not something he'd be able to do again. 765 times 0.75, 573 fantasy points. If we remove him, that would make him 1, 2, 3,
that's
4,
probably
5,
pretty
6.
Similar to like what
number
Patrick
6.
Corbin did last year.
Better. 30 points better than Patrick Corbin. Cole, Greinke, Strasburg, Bieber, DeGrom, and then that would be Verlander, 573. Now, he went 21-6. That's hard to do no matter what, no matter how good you are, but you know, you're at least talking about a top 10 overall pitcher if he misses 25% of his starts based on last year's fantasy points. So, you know, that's...
You have to
find
a way to contend for the first quarter of the season, though,
you
or
do.
At least stay around 500.
You do. And I mean, by the way, Josh James is better for him.
It certainly leaves a rotation spot likely open for the first month of the season. The thing is, we don't know yet. You know, I did some research, and the problem is they didn't say exactly the severity of the sprain or the strain for his lat, but the fact that they didn't, that it does seem mild, makes me think that it's probably more like a grade one strain, if that, and that's usually 6 to 8 weeks. And so 6 to 8 weeks from now, yeah, you're looking at early May in the worst case, but it could be late April, mid-April, really.
By the way, I'll give you a nice comp. How about Max Scherzer last year? Because 75% of Verlander's innings from last season would be 167 and a third, basically. And Scherzer threw 172 and a third. And he had a 2.92 ERA, a 1.03 whip. Scherzer was a lot better than that before his injury. Verlander would probably be better than 2.92 ERA, 1.03 whip. But Scherzer was a top 10 pitcher. I think he was ninth in Roto. And in points, he was not, though. In points, he was like 15th or 16th or something. So there's a comp for you. All right, let me ask you about a couple of emails for Justin Verlander. From BBall10, what is Verlander's trade value right now? Somebody offered me Verlander and Lugo for my Shane Bieber in a Roto league. Would you give up Bieber for Verlander and Lugo?
I mean, if I moved him down beyond Sonny Gray, I obviously wouldn't.
No, you can't do that. Email from Brian. Well, I mean, I can't say you can't do that. Scott wouldn't do that. Mid-May, when you said that, like, kind of took me by surprise. I was thinking more like May?
One? How long is spring training? He's going to have to basically do it over again. He hardly had time to stretch out as it is.
So if he's down for 2 weeks and he makes three starts, he could be back in late April.
Maybe. I don't want...
The thing is, we just don't know. Like,
yeah, I understand being cautious.
This is something that I wrote about last week. I've been talking a lot about the kind of injury vacuum where there's this period between when the injury happens and when we know a concrete timetable. And that's when you can either get great deals in drafts, like if Justin Verlander falls to the fourth round and it turns out that he's only going to miss 3 or 4 weeks, that's the potential, like, huge advantage for your team. Also, it could go wrong and he could end up missing 8 to 10 weeks, and then you kind of get screwed. So it just depends on your risk tolerance at this point. We might know more in 2 days.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's kind of difficult to gauge. Last year I had Clayton Kershaw as a bust candidate, and then he got hurt and started falling to like the round 7 and 8 range. So I ended up with a lot of Clayton Kershaw.
All right, email from Brian. Does Gerrit Cole become that much more of a difference maker if Verlander breaks down? And should we be let's expand it to the other three of the Super Four or whatever, however you want to tier them. Does this make those guys more valuable?
I think it would be a gigantic mistake to look at the 37-year-old starting pitcher with a ton of innings breaking down and or getting hurt in spring training and saying, you know what I need to do? I need to move up the 36-year-old starting pitcher who started breaking down last year. That's what I need to do on my draft board. So I think that would be a huge mistake. Max Scherzer. This should be a reminder of the fragility of starting pitcher. I don't think it will be, but this is the risk. Like, guys who don't have injuries ever get hurt.
Yeah, well, so does Michael Conforto.
Well, I think
Michael
the problem
Conforto
is
had a lot of injury.
It just kind of shrinks. It shrinks the pool of high-end starting pitchers that you can draw from and count on at the start of the season. And so that's going to make the competition for them fiercer. And if you want to have redundancies like I do, so when these injuries inevitably pop up, you're going to want more of them.
Thought got derailed by the phone going.
No, but it's a
laughing.
Good point.
You must think I get texts all day.
You are the one who has so many friends.
It's really just my wife who texts me. That's about it.
Uh-huh. Oh, my wife wants to talk to me all the time. Stop bragging, Scott.
I think it's an interesting point. I think it does make the big four is now a big three. Maybe Walker Buehler's in there. And
yeah. I mean, I'm not moving them up either, but like, I haven't done a draft yet, so I'm not sure how that's going to go.
Sure. And we've already got Verlander, Snell, and Sale dealing with injuries. Sale being obviously the most severe by far. And it is sort of the nature of the beast, although hitters get injured too. As you'll see, Willie Calhoun has a fractured jaw. Do we have a timetable for Willie Calhoun?
Not really a timetable for him either. The fact he needed surgery to have a plate inserted there it leads me to believe it's going to be on the longer end than the shorter end. He still hasn't been tested for a concussion yet, but they're thinking one. It's likely he suffered one. So I'm not counting on an April return for him either, but I don't think it's a situation where he's going to miss like half the season. I dropped him outside of my top 40 outfielders, and if you can get him with a late round pick, it's probably good value, but you shouldn't count on him at the start of the year. In fact, they've already named his replacement at the start of the year. Nick Solak's going to be playing left field virtually every day. I figured he'd get a lot of playing time as a super utility player anyway, but now this just makes it even more obvious that he's somebody you should target in the late rounds.
So what do we expect from Nick Solak? What kind of an impact could he have? He batted hit good numbers, .293, 5 home runs, 17 RBIs, 2 steals, a .393 on base percentage, though, with a .293 batting average for Solak as a rookie last year. He's 25 years old. And, is he a must? He was a must-own player, I'd say, last year. But, of course, he had position eligibility at that point, and it was second base, right?
Yes, it was. And it seems like outfield's what he's going to pick up first this year. But third base, second base could come later on when Willie Calhoun is healthy again. So he could be a pretty versatile player. I think in spite of his home run pace when he got called up and what he did in the minors last year, he's probably more like a 20-homer guy than a 30-homer guy in a season where things go right. But there is the on-base ability that you point to. There's some steals potential there. I think he could be a pretty valuable player who nobody seems to have much interest in part because he's DH only right now, but that's not going to last.
Would you rather have Nick Solak or Shogo Akiyama, who is going to bat leadoff for the Reds when he plays, which may not be against lefties, but who would you rather draft? Solak?
I'd rather have Solak.
Okay. Solak or Andrew McCutchen, who will start the year on the IL.
I'll take Solak there too.
And Solak or Aristides Aquino.
Well, Solak, Aquino's probably going to begin the year in the minors.
All right. Michael Conforto is going to have tests on his injured side, and we'll get back to you with that. Eugenio Suarez making progress, could be ready for opening day. Mike Clevenger was scheduled to throw a bullpen session yesterday. Did he end up throwing the bullpen session, Mike Clevenger?
Yes.
Oh, good. That's good to know.
Yes, he did. And he is looking on pace to meet the most optimistic timeline, which would probably be like mid-April.
Yeah. Oh, here's an article. Jake Bowers, quote, figuring things out. I was Googling Mike Clevenger.
He is talented.
His lower half is really improved. All right, Jake Bowers, a year later, he's a sleeper now. Gary Sanchez, just kidding. Gary Sanchez won't play until Friday due to a back issue. San Francisco's Mauricio Dubon could play center field quite a bit, according to Gabe Kapler. Interest level in him?
Their outfield is really, really gross, so wouldn't surprise me.
Dubon or Solak, how do they compare?
Solak seems better at getting on base. He seems a little bit better as a power hitter, especially given the venue disparity there. So I'd rather have Solak.
Dubon provides the only valuable resource in fantasy baseball, though.
He steals.
What is that?
He steals bases.
Well, Solak does too.
Is he still this many?
Solak, I think, does more reliably than Dubon does.
He had a 38 steal season in 2017. He didn't play much in 2018.
Yeah. What did he do last year?
3 in 30 games.
13. Between the majors and the majors.
I
think his 30 steal days are over.
Okay. And he's got Gabe Kapler, so that doesn't help. Ryan Weber could make the Red Sox rotation. Wow. What bad numbers does he have? Does anybody have any interest in Ryan Weber?
Nick Solak stole 7 bases last year.
Well, fair enough.
Is that a no on Weber?
I thought it was more than that.
No.
No on Weber. All right, today on the show, we're going to talk about our favorite teams from last week's draft and the best way to build a roster. We're going to read your emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com, and we're going to read your tweets, your fill-in-the-blank tweets, at some point in the show. We also have to tell you about SeatGeek. Use the promo code FANTASY for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Again, the promo code is FANTASY on SeatGeek. I have the SeatGeek app, and I can't wait for baseball season to start because I am going to be typing Yankees into my SeatGeek app many, many times, and I'm going to be buying tickets. And I've been using SeatGeek for several years now. I've been recommending it to friends and family and to our listeners. It is simply the easiest way to buy tickets, the best way, the best prices, and they just care so much about customer service. The reviews are terrific. You need to check out the SeatGeek app if you haven't done it yet, because you get competition. They bring in tickets from all over the web. You don't have to go searching site to site. You don't have to go looking, scouring the internet for the best prices. SeatGeek makes that entire process so simple for you. Whether it's sports, comedy, concerts, theater, you need to download the SeatGeek app and start using it right now. Just search for the event you want. They find you tickets. They grade them based on value so you can see the best bang for your buck right away. And if you want to save $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase, just use our promo code FANTASY. Download the SeatGeek app. The promo code is FANTASY. Again, one more time, FANTASY. The promo code on SeatGeek for $10 off your first purchase. Okay, so we did this mock draft last week. We did it on the air. And looking back at it, I wanted to know if you guys had a favorite team. A favorite team. I do have a favorite team. If you're not prepared, I can go first.
You can go first. That's fine.
Okay. So my favorite team was George Mascelli's. Now, I'll say this. I think George might be listening. So I love you, George. I didn't think he made all of the right picks later. Well, I wouldn't say that. I would have done it differently. I wouldn't have drafted Mike Tauchman. I would have had a better third baseman than Ryan McMahon. But I want to highlight his team in a 12-team head-to-head points league because I think four of his first five picks were pitchers. And I just think that George proved that you can do this and still have really good hitters. So his team was Mookie Betts, 7th overall, which I think is... It's hard to have like a steal at 7 overall, but that might be it in a points league because two pitchers had gone ahead of Betts. So I thought that was great. Shane Bieber in round 2. I would have taken Jack Flaherty, but okay. Clayton Kershaw in round 3. I would have taken Aaron Nola, but that's not the point. Noah Syndergaard in round 4. Pitchers were going very early. Round 5, Jose Berríos. So he takes Mookie Betts, and then he takes Shane Bieber, Clayton Kershaw, Noah Syndergaard, and Jose Berríos. I thought he went a little early on Nelson Cruz in round 6, but if he hits, then that's going to be fine. If he hits, not like if the draft pick hits, but if Nelson Cruz is Nelson Cruz, it's going to be fine. Carlos Correa, round 7. Josh Bell, round 8. Really good. Jeff McNeil, round 9. So now George has an infield of Bell, McNeil. And McNeil's really, he leads off. He gets on base, doesn't strike out. He's a good points league guy. Bell, McNeil, Correa, and Nelson Cruz, along with four top 25 starting pitchers. Roberto Ozuna, I think, is a really good pick. He's, could lead the league in saves. I thought Jose Urquidy in round 11 might have been a bit of a reach. But that's his fifth pitcher. Tommy Pham, I would have taken Marcell Ozuna instead of Jose Urquidy. He took Tommy Pham. He could have taken Eddie Rosario. He could have taken Matt Chapman. And then instead of having to rely on Ryan McMahon as his third baseman, he could have taken Matt Chapman there. So I think there were some missteps along the way late, but maybe I'm wrong. Tanaka, McMahon, Danny Santana in the outfield. See about that. Nate Eovaldi is one of his RPs. John Gray, Buster Posey. The rest of the team doesn't matter. Fact is, he could have walked away with a pitching staff of Bieber, Kershaw, Syndergaard, Berríos, Urquidy, Tanaka, etc., and still had Posey, Bell, Jeff McNeil, Matt Chapman, if he had made that pick, Correa, Mookie Betts, Danny Santana, Marcell Ozuna, Nelson Cruz. He could have had a just load. I think that team could have worked. So four starting pitchers with his first five picks in a 12-team head-to-head points league makes me actually want to do it when we do our podcast league draft or our next mock draft.
Oh, man, you just raised the value of all the starting pitchers in the podcast draft.
And that's the thing is that in head-to-head points leagues, especially this year, pitchers are just going so incredibly high that it's going to be really hard to do that because multiple people are going to be trying. That's the only thing I would say is that you could say that that makes getting early pitching a priority, but it also might mean that you're reaching for guys who aren't necessarily worth the spots that they're going.
And that's something I've had to do a lot is just kind of hold my nose and take him, even though I see Nolan Arenado still on the board and I'm taking Lucas Giolito and it hurts and it's not, it goes so against
Arenado?
Instinct,
not Arenado.
Yeah, I've done that before.
You take Scott.
I don't know if Nolan Arenado is this.
It wasn't.
Well, please, in this instance,
you know what I'm saying. Let's not get caught up on the details.
Hold on, Chris. That's not getting caught up on the details. I like at one point, you know, like 2 months ago, we did a mock draft and you took Giolito over Altuve and Aaron Judge, and I was like, "Whoa, that's crazy," but understandable. But Nolan Arenado, I think, like if you take Giolito, who's had one good half season over the most consistent hitter in baseball, I think I would smack you. Like,
Trout. This seemed to be the point you were making, right? Is that there are still so many good hitters available after that pitching run is over that you just don't want to get left out of it because what is your pitching staff going to look like? And if you have a bad pitching staff, particularly in this format, I've already said I just don't see how it's even possible you could win. You're condemning yourself to a loss.
It's kind of true. Yes, your broader point is certainly taken there.
But like you did pass on Trey Turner for Lucas Giolito with your third.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, and obviously Trey Turner is probably more like a late second rounder than a first rounder in this format.
Points league. All right, so Scott, Chris, who are your favorite teams? You guys have one?
I hate to say it. I think it's Scott's.
Yeah, oh, Scott's team's good.
and it's partially because Scott drafted more like how I usually would than how he usually would. Because he had the number one overall pick. He took Mike Trout. Smart move. Way to go, Scott. Then he took Patrick Corbin and Lucas Giolito, but then his next two picks were hitters. After that, he went three pitchers in a row from that kind of third or fourth tier where there's a lot of upside. It was Jordan Alvarez in round four, Tel Marte in round five, then Mike Soroka, Frankie Montas, Jesus Luzardo. I wouldn't have taken Soroka that high, but he's fine. And then Montas and Luzardo, there's obviously a ton of potential there. Luzardo being a SPARP as well helps. But then this is the thing about pitching getting pushed up so much is that you have guys, Matt Olson going 97th overall, Eugenio Suarez going 120th. There's going to be values at hitter. And so you can go one of two ways. You can either load up your hitting with like, you could probably with your first four picks get like four possible first round hitters. If that's the way you want to go. That's what I did in the auction, head-to-head auction that we did 2 weeks ago. Or you can load up on pitcher and they're still going to be pretty good hitters as long as you know when to take them. And so that Matt Olson pick at 97th, Eugenio Suarez at 120th, those are really great values.
So the thing is, I just think that, like, let's compare Scott's team to George's team. Because I think George's team is just better. You know, and they had, I don't know, did they have similar strategies? Like Scott took, and Scott's team is good, but Scott took Mike Trout first overall and then two pitchers. George took Mookie Betts seventh overall and then two pitchers, but then he actually took four pitchers. But like, okay, fine. Let's just pound for pound. Catcher, Scott has Ramos, George has Posey, Scott wins. First base, Josh Bell versus Matt Olson. Is that a draw?
That's a draw.
Second base, McNeil versus Jonathan Villar in a points league.
McNeil.
I'd rather have McNeil, but.
Although I'm not sure Villar wasn't as good as him last year in a points league.
I was about to say.
Yeah,
that.
He was.
Yeah, I think I'm
expecting a bigger step back for Villar than McNeil.
Third base, Eugenio Suarez for Scott, McMahon for George. But again, that should have been Matt Chapman, but still Scott gets the win there. Shortstop is Mondesi for Scott and Correa for George. So George wins that. Outfield.
Presumably.
Probably whoever's healthiest.
Yeah.
It's just a bad format for Mondesi, but...
But he was... Yeah, I mean, when you steal that many bases...
Yeah, that's the thing is, like, he strikes out a lot, he doesn't walk, but he steals a ton of bases. He's probably going to lead the majors in steals. He's probably going to hit for some power.
Yeah, but like, so, Billy Hamilton was never... Well, okay, he's better.
I'm going to compare their points per game last year, just because...
Okay.
I'm curious.
I would guess Mondesi hit more home runs last year than Billy Hamilton's entire professional career.
Yeah, but Correa was bad last year, right? Like, Correa was just...
No, Correa was good when he was healthy. And he was better on a per game basis. It was 3.49 versus 3.22. Not that 3.22 was bad. I mean, Gleyber Torres was 3.28. But...
Sorry, Correa was bad in 2018.
I'll give the advantage to George there.
All right, outfield. Trout. Yeah, Big edge for Scott. Trout, Ketel Marte, J.D. Davis, Betts, Danny Santana, and Mike Tauchman. But again, he could have had Marcell Ozuna.
It's Scott actually wins. Fam rather than Tauchman. He put Fam on his bench for some reason.
Fam. Well, should have had Ozuna. Nelson Cruz for Alvarez for Scott. Nelson Cruz for... I think Scott has slightly better hitting. I'll say that. But I like the pitching better for George.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. I did end up with four of my mythical top 36 in Giolito, Corbin, Giolito, Soroka, and Montas. But Soroka and Montas are near the bottom of that. And
you also have Lizardo and Maeda as your RPs. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge edge, too.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not dissatisfied with the way it turned out. I normally like to have a little bit better pitching than this, but... I got some good upside there from my bench. I also got Adrian Hauser, who, in case Lizardo or Maeda doesn't work out for some reason, there's another spark there. Alex Wood, who I like a lot. Garrett Richards, Dylan Cease have both been getting a lot of buzz this spring. So I think the pitching will be fine.
I do want to point out one thing, because we haven't talked about it yet. It's about Jose Berríos, George Maselli's number four starter. He is reworking his curveball in spring training. He's always thrown that big, like, looping, slurvy curveball that's kind of between a slider and a curveball. Looks like it should be a really good pitch. Doesn't really get a lot of swings and misses with it. He is reworking it to get more, to get less horizontal movement, more vertical break, with the hope of getting more swings and misses with it and having it look more like his fastball out of his hand. And so I do want to point out that if that's an effective change and it does make the curveball a better swing and miss pitch, Jose Berríos could take a big step forward. I just wanted to talk about it because we haven't talked about it.
I appreciate that. That's always good stuff. Love to hear those types of spring tidbits. And Berríos is a guy that just has so many great starts. And that, to me, just means that there's some capability there of him being just great. You know, he's been good. I just feel like there's a way to unlock something there with Jose Berríos. He does things that most starting, like, he'll have more starts of like seven innings, one run than just about any pitcher, but he has too many bad starts too.
I made a kind of weird comp early in the offseason, but I stand by it. He has a lot in common with Kyle Hendricks. He gets more strikeouts, doesn't have quite as good of control, but what they both really, they go about it in different ways. Berríos' stuff looks a lot better, but and he throws 6 miles an hour harder. But what they really excel at is limiting hard contact. Jose Berríos is one of the best starters in baseball at that. And so if he can get the strikeout rate, you know, up over a strikeout per inning on average, because he does it occasionally, and keeps that ability to limit hard contact, there is a chance that he finally, after everyone's kind of written him off as just like a mid-rotation guy, could take a lead.
Last thing, Berríos in the last two seasons has 19 starts of seven innings or more and two or fewer earned runs. Walker Buehler has 15 in those two seasons. Zach Greinke has 18 in those two seasons, and Berríos has 19. He can be so great sometimes, so there's some hope for more, I guess. And Scott, did you have a favorite team in this league?
I mean, if I'm being honest, it was probably mine, but I'm apparently not supposed to be that guy.
Boo!
We can move on.
George has popped out to me too, but I will highlight another one. Highlight Phil Penebchek's team. which is probably, is it the weakest in hitting of the three we've highlighted already? I mean, it's not bad. Wilson Contreras is a catcher. Carlos Santana at first base is, of course, a stud in this format. Tommy Edman at second with Garrett Hampson as a fallback. Eduardo Escobar at third with Justin Turner as a fallback. Marcus Semien at short. An outfield, strong outfield. George Springer, Jorge Soler, Andrew Benintendi. David Dahl is at his utility spot. I mean, he didn't slack in his... Like, it's not like he has a late rounder at any of those hitting spots. I guess maybe Tommy Edman comes the closest. And then his pitching staff is Zach Greinke, Chris Sale, Corey Kluber. Oh, I missed the top one. Jeez. Jacob DeGrom, Zach Greinke, Corey Kluber, Hyunjin Ryu, and then Chris Sale when he gets back. He has Carlos Martinez as a SPARP.
Ian Kennedy, yep.
Me and Kennedy and Giovanni Gallegos too, if he wins the job. Yeah, that's a really, that looks like a really strong team. Weaker maybe in, like, not a lot of big name hitters, but you could certainly see that lineup going right.
And so let's take a look at how he did it. He took DeGrom fourth. So he took DeGrom ahead of Christian Yelich because Cole was third. It went Trout, Acuna.
Which I wouldn't advise.
Yeah.
But,
Trout, Acuna, you know. Cole, DeGrom, Yelich. But that was the top five. So he took DeGrom, Springer in round two, which is probably a reach in a roto league, but not necessarily in a points league. He's possibly going to lead the league or lead baseball in plate appearances, and that matters. Zach Greinke in round three, Marcus Semien in round four seems like a good pick.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, he could have taken Gleyber Torres, and you know, that's a surprise.
But I mean, we've talked about how Gleyber Torres is being overvalued, and I just told you what his points per game was last year.
But we all like him better than Semien, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's interesting when you're breaking it down pick by pick because those sound like bad picks, but I think this is a year where you really have to be mindful of overall roster construction as opposed to just take the best guy available over and over again.
So anyway, he went to DeGrom, Springer, Greinke, Semien, Kluber, Sale. That's four of his top six were pitchers. Sale went after Sonny Gray. He went before Mike Soroka. So round six doesn't seem like that much of a discount, but he went late among starting pitchers. He went after Bumgarner, after Sonny Gray. All right, good stuff. Thank you. And the results of that draft are available. You can go to cbssports.com/fantasy/baseball. And then you scroll down a little bit, kind of in the middle of the page, there's these mock drafts, and you can click on them and see the mock drafts. Enter our podcast league. Do something creative. Do whatever you want. Songs are always appreciated. One thing you shouldn't do, though, is give me a parody song that's just lyrics. Be like, hey, here's a parody I wrote of this song, and just give me the lyrics. Like, that's not going to do it. I just don't really enjoy those. So
someone asking to be in the league might get in.
Yes.
But someone who takes the time to write out full parody lyrics.
Yeah, won't get
will
in.
Not.
Right, right.
You're a monster. Bribes are accepted, by the way.
Put Podcast League in the subject line. You have to put Podcast League in the subject line. We also haven't come up with a date for the draft. So we'll have to do that and hopefully announce that tomorrow or Thursday. The Bracket Challenge. Join our March Madness Bracket Challenge. The link is in the description. The time codes are also in the description if you're looking for specifics on when we talk about things. And please be kind and leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts. That would be very kind of you. A 5-star review with a, you know, hey, these guys are awesome. I love them. Yeah. You can put that verbatim. We'd appreciate it. Roto pitching strategy. I teased this a little bit. I executed it in a mock we did a couple weeks ago, and then I did it again in the auction. And I'm working on an acronym for it. But so far I have Tap Hap AMC as my rolls off the tongue acronym. Tap Hap AMC.
Taffapamk sounds like a town in Massachusetts.
Taffapamk, sure. Taffapamk with a C at the end, yeah. That's two aces plus Hader and Paxton and more closers. That's my strategy. It's two top six. Got to be two top six. And it can't be... Well, now it's two top five because of Verlander. And it can't be Bueller and Flaherty. So it's got to be like one of the top three plus, or two of the top three, and then Bueller and Flaherty could be one of them.
So you're paying up for dependability at starting pitch.
I'm paying up for 300, potentially 300 strikeouts, sub one whip, 250-ish ERA from one or two players. You know, like just the best of the best.
Just hoping they stay healthy.
Hoping they stay healthy, yes. And then you have to get Josh Hader because he gives you like 125 strikeouts, some saves, and also a great ERA and whip. And then you win saves. You get three more closers. You win saves. Mm-hmm. You're winning ERA. You're winning whip. You're winning saves. I get Paxton because...
Adam.
What?
You're drafting four closers and you're going to have two.
Yeah.
In like a best case scenario.
No, best case scenario is you have four. The realistic scenario is you have two or three. Two. And you're aggressive on waivers and you still prioritize saves. Because yes, those are not going to be the four closers you have throughout the season. But you'll have a leg up on the competition.
Okay. So you're not necessarily counting on winning saves. But you're kind of overdoing it to safeguard against volatility, which is kind of what I'm doing starting pitch.
Yeah, I would say that's more fair. I put Paxton in there because he's discounted, and I thought he was only going to miss like a little more than a month, but I've been reading lately that he might miss most of May. I thought it was more like early May. So that actually matters quite a bit, but I've seen conflicting information on him.
Yeah, I feel like he's on the same timeline as... he's thrown a bullpen, I'm pretty sure, like Clevinger has.
Yeah.
But I was hearing more optimistic things as
the initial
got closer.
Timetable was May to June.
Yeah, but I...
But he keeps beating his timeline.
I've been hearing that it moved up closer to the early end of that.
Right. So, you know, this is just kind of what I'm going for. It's two studs, Hader, three more closers, and then you can do whatever the hell you want with the other spots. But I would recommend, like, I have Luke Weaver on the auction league. I would like to have like four starting pitchers that I could throw out there all the time and five relievers. And they don't all have to be closers. Like, you can get a Seth Lugo. I drafted Dellin Betances. Hopefully he needs to get his velocity up. But that's the basis of the strategy. And TAFAPAMK. We'll see how it goes. It's Team Dave Tuesday. Lord of War. Wins above replacement. Yeah. A highly underrated film, according to the person who submitted Lord of War. Never seen it.
Sounds like something somebody would say who submitted Lord of War.
Probably. Glenn Perkins. Like Ann Perkins from Parks and Rec gave that one away last week. Dude, you're getting Adele. Like Joe Adele.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that one.
I've been going for him in these, been doing a lot of draft and holds, these like 50 man rosters, and Joe Adele has been a key part of my strategy.
How about Molly Hatchet, like Tyler Malley? Molly Hatchet.
I like it. Yeah.
I thought you would. Set to the tune of Huey Lewis and the News classic, Do You Believe in Love? Ryu Believe in Lux.
Okay. Sure.
I don't know. I hate when they try and cram a second name in there unless it really works. I'm
Is
not
that
sure
one on
that
news?
One really works.
What'd you say?
Is that on news?
I don't know. I don't know, Chris. Who cares? You're such a show off.
I've got that album.
You're such a show off right now. I know, Huey. Get out of here. And finally, this one's perfect for
sports. Actually, that's what it's called. It's not news. It's sports. Wrong segment of the paper.
This is a Carter Keyboom reference. Okie Boomers. Okie Boomers.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, like, okay, Boomer. Yeah, I like that one. All right, read emails. Oh, sorry.
So Roto World's most recent updates of James Paxton keep saying late April or early May, and he's scheduled to begin throwing on Wednesday, so 2 days after Clevinger. I don't know. He tends to fall really far in drafts,
yes.
Paxton, but I think he's becoming a good value if Roto World is right there about what they keep saying.
Well, he's part of TapHap AMC. Now you know. All right, here's some emails, then we'll do fill in the blank. This is from Jeff in Nog. Dear Murray Quinn, Volcano, and Gatto, I don't know. Which Rays starters We'll have openers go before them. Chirinos and Yarbrough?
Those would be the only ones.
And even that, they kind of moved away from that with Yarbrough at the end of last year, didn't they?
And I feel like they weren't doing it much with Chirinos at the beginning of the year when he was at his healthiest. Let me see how many starts versus relief appearances he ended up making.
Those were the impractical jokers.
Yeah, they were impractical jokers. They used the last names of the impractical jokers. If you'd done like Sal and Murr, I would have gotten it.
18 starts, 8 relief appearances for Chirinos. So yeah, after pioneering that strategy, the Rays kind of backed off from it.
You're on a first name basis with the impractical jokers, Adam?
Everybody is. By the way, the Ryan Yarbrough's last 9 appearances were all starts. He threw 51 2/3 innings. He had a 4.53 ERA. He did have a good walk to strikeout ratio: 7 walks, 47 strikeouts, and 51 2/3. But his last 2 starts were only one of them was only 3 1/3. Okay, next email is from Jonathan. Dear JD, Steven, Stubbs, and Pomerantz. This one I get.
Drews.
Yeah.
10 teams, 6x6, head-to-head categories leagues with holds. After Pomerantz moved to the bullpen, his underlying numbers look fantastic. What say you about Drew Pomerantz's performance, and does he stand out next to Ryan Pressly as one of the top holds relievers in 2020?
I mean, just look at what the Padres gave him this offseason. So clearly they are buying in. And
He was awesome. He had 8 walks, 45 strikeouts, and 26 1/3 with a .91 whip in the bullpen. I thought that was with Milwaukee, though, with Pomerantz.
It was.
Okay.
But he signed with the Padres for a big deal this offseason.
Okay, so he went from San Francisco, and he was mostly a starter there. Then he went to Milwaukee. They used him as a reliever. .239 ERA, .91 whip, ridiculous strikeout rate. Okay, put him on that's another guy. He could be part of TapHap AMC, the Roto strategy, Drew Pomerantz. This is from Adam. Please make fun of my friend who kept Vladimir Guerrero over Trey Turner in an 8-team league with only 5 keepers. That is all. Thank you. I refuse to do it. This could be a brilliant move. Could be a brilliant move in a year.
It's impossible to justify if it's a categories league, whether head to head or roto. If it's a points league, I still want to do it, but. You're at least not giving up those steals that are so necessary.
This is from Brian. From following Scott's pitching strategy all offseason, nobody took his best available 2 SPs in the latest points mock draft. What bats, if any, were available in late round 2 and early round 3 would force him to abandon his early starting pitching strategy? He passed on Trey Turner. All right, so what he's saying is Scott took Mike Trout, then he took Corbin and Giolito. Were there any bats that could have been on the board that would have made you stray from Corbin?
I think
Giolito?
He's asking which bats could be available that would make him switch.
That's exactly what I just said. That's exactly you know.
No, you
just go listen to your Huey Lewis.
No, you asked it wrong. It was a hypothetical.
I'm saying which bat. Yes, Chris, you're right. Which bats would have been available if...
God, you're such a jerk!
For Scott to have strayed from the Corbin Giolito back-to-back picks.
You guys are telling me Nolan Arenado, and I'm inclined to agree with you. He went early in round 2 in this draft. But Freddie Freeman, I kind of pair Arenado and Freeman in my mind. And Freeman went with the 8th pick of round 2. If he was still there, I probably would have had to consider him. I could see Anthony Rodon actually went in the first round of this particular draft. And obviously points is where Rendon is even better. He was better on a per game basis than Arenado in 2018 as well as 2019. So if Arenado was there at the end of round 2, I'd probably have to take him. I think it's possible like Juan Soto could be there.
What about JD Martinez, Scott?
It's not likely, but that's what it would take. It's just something that unlikely happening.
Well, JD Martinez is fairly realistic. In fact, he was picked two spots before Corbin and Giolito. Would you have taken JD Martinez?
I don't know. I want to say yes, but I'm not sure I would. I feel like I've passed him up at that range before.
Okay. I think, yeah. Okay. And this is all contingent on you having a hitter with your first pick and Trout. Like if you had gone with a pitcher,
if I had Cole or DeGrom at this point, then it's easier to take the hitter with the second pick. And then I still probably take a pitcher with my third in a points league. In a roto league, maybe not.
And then just one more scenario, right? Let's say Scott goes Mike Trout and then someone falls to him like Soto or Freeman, or maybe he does take JD Martinez and he takes Patrick Corbin, skips Giolito. And then in round four, instead of taking Alvarez and Ketel Marte, you take one of those two, Jordan Alvarez or Ketel Marte, and then you take Wheeler or Kluber or Berríos. Who would be your favorite there? Carrasco, Bauer.
Which of those pitchers would
be
my
favorite?
Yeah,
who would you have taken?
Of the ones you listed, Bauer, though, are Darvish and Sonny Gray gone at that point? Because I like
Sonny Gray
them
is
both
there. Darvish
pitchers.
Is gone.
Darvish is gone. Let me see where Sonny Gray went.
Yeah,
middle
he's there.
Of round
Sonny,
six.
Sonny
so
Gray is there.
He's still there. Yeah, Sonny Gray would be the first I'd prioritize of them.
All right, so what do you like better? Final thought here. Trout, Corbin, Giolito, Jordan Alvarez, or Trout, Corbin, JD Martinez, Sonny Gray?
Yeah, well, I mean, just among the four players, I like the Martinez combo more, but it's then going to have an effect on what my pitching staff looks like. And I was already a little uneasy about the four I went with at the top there. So I think I'd have to stick with the Giolito, just anticipating what my full team is going to look like.
This is from Noah. Can you give me an analysis of Taijuan Walker this season?
I'm very interested in seeing what he does in the spring. It sounds like the velocity's mostly been there coming back from Tommy John surgery, but the biggest problem with Taijuan Walker has pretty much always been that he just doesn't really have a put-away pitch. His curveball was the closest, but the swing strike rate on that was just okay. So I haven't seen any reason to believe that's changed. If he has spent his rehab from Tommy John developing, either tightening the curveball or developing the cutter into more of a swing and miss pitch, I could see being interested in him. But right now, he's nothing more than like a late round flyer in a deep league.
Taijuan Walker back with Seattle after a few years with Arizona, where he didn't do that much. This is an email from RJ. Howdy, gang. I've got a single NA stash in my lineup for prospects. We have a 30 waiver move limit for the season, but the NA position adds without penalty. I've had Royce Lewis in my spot since the start of last season. Is Royce the kind of prospect worth hanging on to in this spot until he's called up? Or would it make sense to try to get the likes of a Michael Kopech once the season begins and try to add Royce Lewis at a later time?
So Royce Lewis is coming off a pretty bad season. Of course, he's a former number one overall pick. And I think evaluators are split on his bat right now, particularly if he's going to be hit for much in the way of average. But he almost certainly will be the Twins starting shortstop at some point. It won't be this year. Maybe he breaks through next year. I think when you're talking about only one minor league spot, and that's true for every team across your league, it makes sense to play the more near term game unless it's a prospect so high end that like Mackenzie Gore, who himself might be up at some point this year, but hey, what's a better example? Maybe Jared Kelenic. But yeah, no, I think given the options you presented, going the Kopech route probably makes more sense.
I'm going to read two more questions involving Marlins pitchers. This is from Josh. I'm in a head-to-head points league. I've got a killer group of pitchers. Cole, Bieber, Glasnow, Fried, Wheeler, Clevenger, Hader, Kimbrell, and Caleb Smith. But after listening to you guys talk about Sparps, I'm wondering if I should drop Caleb Smith for any of the following. Kyle Gibson, Adrian Hauser, Yanni Chirinos, or Kevin Gausman?
I would drop him for Hauser. I would also drop him for... Maybe I want to drop him for Chirinos, but I definitely would drop him for Hauser.
All right, and then Chris, this one's for you. from Dan in Richmond, Virginia. Dear Carlos, Jesus, Ryan, and Adrian.
This is the wrong one.
Dear, okay, sorry, Carlos. Sorry, Dan from Richmond. We are not reading your email. From MD from TO, which is Toronto. Go Raptors. Dear Pugsley, Wednesday, and Morticia. Okay, I know them. I tweeted this to Chris, but I fear he may have thought it was a troll. It really wasn't. It was inspired by all the talk of the Pirates rotation, reminding me of the talk of the Stallions of the Marlins last season. Would love to hear your thoughts on how are they now regarding Richards, Alcantara, Smith, and Lopez compared to the helium with the Pirates guys this year.
I'm still willing to take Alcantara, Smith, or Lopez with a late round pick. For Lopez, it has to be more of a deeper league, but I've actually drafted a surprising amount of Sandy Alcantara. He's another guy who, like Jose Barrios and Kyle Hendricks, is elite at limiting hard contact. And so the question for him, whether he can get the walk rate into a manageable range rather than just very bad, but I think there's potential there. And Caleb Smith, I mean, he was excellent before the injury. So it's a question of how much you believe his bad second half was the result of the hip injury and how much you believe it was regression to the mean. All of the underlying numbers in the first, it was like 2 months of the season where he was one of the best pitchers in baseball, and the underlying numbers mostly backed it up. So I think there's still potential there. It's just a question of how much of it, again, was the result of the injury derailing him.
All right. Those are your emails, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. And let's do some fill in the blank to finish today's show. From Danny Perez, this year's Cody Bellinger is blank. Guy who will become a fantasy superstar this year.
Man, this is tough to pull out of thin air. I am going to say
Vlad.
Yoan Moncada.
Yoan Moncada? Okay.
Did you say Vlad?
I am going to go with... I don't know. I don't know. Sorry. Matt Olson. Matt Olson. I feel like we haven't seen his full upside in a season yet.
From Ross, blank will be the most productive mid-season promotion for 2020.
Joe Adell.
I'm going to say... Trey Mancini. I'm sorry, not Trey Mancini. The other guy for the Orioles. I'm sorry. Ryan Mountcastle.
Ryan Mountcastle.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be like word association, Scott. You just got to say the first name that comes to mind.
Well.
Regardless if it's wrong.
Yes, people, they don't care about accuracy. They just care about speed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is from Garrett Atkins, who drafts with us at times. Garrett Atkins, blank will be this season's Hunter Pence. Garrett Atkins is not the answer to this fill in the blank. Blank will be this season's Hunter Pence, a.k.a. a former fantasy stud who will rise from the dead in 2020.
I feel like Chris drafts a lot of those guys.
I would bet more on Matt Carpenter than Joey Votto.
I think both are good answers.
Miguel Cabrera.
Yeah,
actually, I wish we hadn't talked about it this late in the show, but Eric Hosmer.
Please.
Eric Hosmer is finally talking about hitting the ball in the air for the first time in his life and actually doing it so far in spring training. For his spring training career, he has, I hate that MLB.com only has ground outs versus fly outs, but that's all we have. We don't have ground ball rate. Before his spring training career, he has averaged 2.3 ground ball outs for every fly ball out that he has recorded. This year, he has averaged, oh God, the math is way less straightforward, 2 ground ball outs for every 5 fly ball outs, I think. Either way, he is hitting the ball in the air a lot more in the spring.
Glad you finished with that, because I got lost in the math there.
Elite skills, but that's the... He hits the ball really hard. He always has. He's always been really, really good with runners on base for his career. And for the first time in his career, he is actually talking about hitting the ball in the air. It's 2020. I hope Eric Hosmer joins us.
Okay. And how about, let's see, next fill in the blank is from Andrew Grubbs. Miguel Andujar will finish as a top blank outfielder.
40.
That's where my thought was going to. Yeah.
From Jake, you should draft Chris Bryant over Josh Donaldson because blank.
He'll
injuries.
I'm more confident he'll play, yeah.
Batting average should be better, I would think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if they stay healthy, I mean, Donaldson's probably going to out-homer Bryant, I would guess.
Yeah. It'll be similar if they stay healthy, but they're...
I mean, Donaldson had like 10 more last year, right?
I don't know.
Home runs?
He may have.
Didn't Donaldson have like 39?
No. He had...
I think he may have.
I think it was pretty close if it wasn't 10 full more.
He had 37.
I think it was 8 more.
And Bryant didn't hit 30 last year?
No. I don't think he hit
30. He hit 30. Oh, okay. 30 on the nose. Right?
So it's more like 5 apart.
Wait, how many do you have?
It's officially 6 apart, 37 versus 31. But it's closer to 5 than 10 if we're
round
doing
up to 10.
Round numbers.
We round up to 10. You always round up.
Yes,
everyone
that's true.
That.
6 rounds up to 10. Cannot argue with that.
It's 100% factual.
From Brent.
Next question.
From Brent, the stolen base leader for 2020 will be blank.
Adalberto Mondesi.
I don't see how it could be anyone else if he's healthy, yeah.
From Josh Yu, or actually, I think I forgot the A. I think this is from Joshua. My bad, I just wrote Joshu. Blank is this year's Kirby Yates, a.k.a. a low-key closer who could be this year's saves leader.
Literally any closer.
That's just not true. You cannot. Yeah. Well, actually, I guess that is true because Yates, I think they were a last place team.
Jim Johnson led the league in saves 2 years in a row. Man.
Yeah, but you got to be on a good team typically. Or at least
Giovanni
not a bad
Gallegos.
Team. Giovanni Gallegos, that could definitely be the case. Eric Baker, Jordan Alvarez pronounces his name blank and my evidence is blank.
Jordan, and I'm the worst person at pronouncing things, so there is no evidence.
Jim Bowden. Jim Bowden.
Jim Bowden is what this all goes
back to,
right?
The most plugged-in guy. I believe he got that from Jeff Luno. Right? It's pronounced Jordan, but I always hear it as Jordan, so I'm going Jordan.
Yeah. I have, with other players of, you know, Hispanic names, I've never heard the Y pronounced as a J for any other. I have heard the J pronounced as a Y, like Johan Santana, but I haven't heard the Y pronounced as a J before.
From Brian, blank is the shallowest position in the head-to-head categories league.
Besides catcher?
I guess so.
Catcher.
Second base.
Yeah. From Luke, blank is the best stop. Blank is the best spot to draft from in a 12-team head-to-head points league.
1, 3.
Okay. From Matt Williams, who...
Oh, in a points league. I'm sorry. 2.
2? You
want yeah.
Trotter Yelich,
yeah.
Okay. And Matt Williams, who we said had the best team in our auction. Blank is my dark horse to lead the majors in home runs.
Well, since he didn't get an A-plus from Scott's ranking, I'm going to say Mike Trout counts as a dark horse.
I am going to say, does Miguel Sano count?
I think so.
Franmil Reyes would be an even darker horse.
Okay. Love Franmil. Love the Franimal.
I mean, it seems like Jorge Soler would be kind of a dark horse, even though he led the AL, right?
He has been so bad in the spring. He has like a 50% strikeout rate.
Uh-oh.
Come on.
No, don't come on. That's Travis
what?
Shaw territory.
Are we supposed to dismiss spring stats?
Not strikeout rate.
How many at-bats does he have? Like 14?
Well, no, it's like 20-something.
And you were rounding up. We always round
already?
Up. So now it's 30.
Are you just making this up?
No, he has 29 plate appearances and 13 strikeouts. So he struck out in half of his at-bats, not half of his plate appearances.
That's a lot. Okay. Mike Moustakas would be my dark horse, and Eric Hosmer would be my other dark horse based on what Chris just said. Thanks for listening, y'all. I am not going to be on the show tomorrow, so Chris and Scott, good luck. I think tomorrow we're going to talk about how to draft in different formats and maybe recap the categories draft that we're doing. It's a categories draft today, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so.
I don't know why I answered. I have no idea.
Do you believe? All right, we gotta go. For Chris and Scott, I'm Adam. Thanks for listening. Talk to you tomorrow.
hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What about when your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.